Welcome back to the Cave of Solitude, your comic book and pop culture podcast, coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. I'm your host, Eric Anthony, and yes, I have taken the reins back from Daft J, who hijacked the show on the last episode, which was all in good fun. I love it. I thought her intro was hilarious. And of course, she is a co-founder and co-host of the show, so she can do whatever she pleases, as long as she knows how to post it properly, which thankfully it all worked out just fine. And let's be completely honest, there is much more entertainment value whenever Daft J is on the show. So thank you, Daft J, for taking the reins on the last one. You did a great job. I hope you do that more often. Anyhow, let us get back to the topic at hand today. The Fan Expo 2017 coverage will continue to be released early and often, coming at you fast and furious until, of course, some DC representative tells me to take down what some of the panels that I recorded guerrilla style. But if that is the case, that means that we have made it, people. People are listening on a high level. Now, talking about the subject at hand, I will say Sunday morning, 11 o'clock, it was one of the best panels that I have been to at a Fan Expo. I will say that Dan Slott and Greg Capullo last year were fantastic because it was an intimate crowd where they were really engaging and having a lot of fun with the fans. And this one is in the same light. I can't say that it was better because those guys did a great job last year. If you haven't listened to those episodes, check them in our archives. They're a lot of fun. But currently, in regards to this episode, in my humble opinion, I got to sit in on a panel with Tom King, who is in rarefied air right now when it comes to comic writers. I would say along with guys like Matt Kent, Jeff Lemire, Scott Snyder, in regards to, you know, those big writers that people are talking about right now, prolific writers that are hitting everything that they do out of the park. Tom King is the guy, the scribe behind titles such as Grayson and the Omega Man from the DCU line, which a lot of people criticize, but when you think about the fact that he jumped onto writing DC during that era, just after the New 52 when they did that silly convergence event. But out of that convergence event, a lot of good things did come out of it. And Grayson is a great comic book run that he did. Omega Man is phenomenal. It's a finite story. I highly recommend that anybody who's listening to this go out and pick up Omega Man. It's not hyperbole. It's a classic. As well as The Vision from Marvel Comics, which he wrote. 12-issue maxi series as well. He won Eisner's for that. Again, not hyperbolic in any way. Probably the best book that had come out all year last year. On the Vertigo side, going back to the DC Warner Brothers line, Sheriff of Babylon, which is Tom doing a more intense and serious look at a little bit of his experience in the CIA, which is, I haven't read it yet myself, but again, this is Tom King. There's nothing that he has written that hasn't been great. And now he is the current writer on Batman, which is, you know, top of the mountain. As well as writing Batman and being at the top of the mountain, he's starting a new maxi series, Mr. Miracle. Now that's awesome because this is the centennial year of Jack Kirby. Mr. Miracle is a Jack Kirby creation, and Tom King is, we all feel, he's already writing the heck out of that book, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this story unfolds. So for me this year, Tom King, hands down, was the creator who I paid my Fan Expo admission on a professional level. That was the guy who I wanted to see, wait in line, get his autograph, have a chance to meet and greet with him, and I actually bumped into him in Artist Alley, which was awesome. And I asked him to be on the podcast, people. We'll see if that happens. I think I'd have to jump through some DC hoops in order to do that. However, today you get to listen to his panel on Sunday at Fan Expo, like I said. And let me tell you, it was a trip. It was part Q&A, part stand-up comic routine, if I do say so myself, complete with Alan Moore impressions. This episode will definitely go down as one of my favorites that we've been able to post, and I'm sure you're going to agree with that. I'd like to send a shout out before we head into the episode. Let me just handle some business and send a shout out to Adam Chapman of the Comic Shenanigans podcast, who was in attendance as well, who I had the pleasure of meeting this weekend and hanging out with for the evening. He is a seasoned vet in the podcast universe. Go check out his show. It's comicshenanigans.com. You can see it or find it on iTunes as well. He's got over 500 episodes of fantastic guests and conversations about this medium that we love. Now remember, if you want to find books from Tom King, hit up Cyber City Comics at Bathurst and Steeles in North York on the south side of Steeles. Just look up in the sky. You will see the sign shining like a beacon of comic salvation. All right. Let's get into business, or let's get out of business. Let's get into the panel. This is Tom King, Fan Expo 2017. And if you have children around you or in the vehicle while you're listening to this, don't let them listen to this. This is for adults only. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will be back soon with more Fan Expo coverage.
You're in charge.
Oh, there are three little children out in the audience. I'm not going to say any bad words.
Almost never.
Oh, he just shrugged. Okay, fuck, I'm going to say a lot of bad words. What's going on? You guys, I like this. You guys are like near the front. Like, this is an American con. There'd be like 17 guys in the back. You guys are not afraid of me. We're all afraid of each other in America now. Probably for a good reason.
Yeah.
Oh, what's going on? Can I try out my Canadian joke on you? I was working on it all weekend. Okay. I was gonna. If anyone brought up Sheriff of Babylon, I was gonna say, yeah, that was the best-selling Vertigo comic, which is like saying, you're the best American hockey player. Right? Fucking worked on that. Right?
Yeah.
Nailed it.
I'm impressed. I wasn't sure how that was gonna go.
That's all I have for the whole panel. That was my only plan. I don't know, now we have what? How many minutes did I take up?
Oh crap.
Oh, it's just now 11.
Just now 11? Oh, I should have waited. I assumed they were going to laugh for 59 minutes.
You should have closed with that. That was strong.
I just keep repeating it for the whole thing. That's how Jokes and Riddles ends. It's all Canadian jokes.
It's all just really bad dad jokes.
It's all bad dad jokes.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's a spotlight on Tom King. It's this guy.
That's me.
It is.
Wait, your husband's in the audience.
My husband is in the audience.
So at least one of these people isn't here for me, it's here for you. So there's less actual people here than
I am. To be fair, he might be here for you.
You and me, Paul. Well, okay, what's up?
You guys having fun at Fan Expo? Yeah. Woo! How many people here, this is your first Comic-Con?
All right. Yeah! Hello. I'm sorry about the bad words. And the hockey jokes. Hey, nice to see you. Oh my, now I can hear my own voice. That's terrible. What a horrible voice I have. Oh, it's lovely? You rock. I take back all the mean things I said about you.
Wait, all of them? Wow.
She knows what she
heard. I showed my boss your card. Your next con will get 10 out of 10 reviews.
So 10 out of 10? We're there. Awesome.
Are you bribing the press in a panel that people are recording?
This is post-Trump. You just do stupid shit in the open. People still like you. I don't know the fuck. Oh, I know. This is where I can make my Trump jokes and not get, like, fucking shot. It's awesome. I said fuck again.
He has no fear now. He hung off the CN Tower last night, so he's like...
I told, and people in my line are like, I was like, have you ever done it? He's like, no, that's what we make tourists do. Like, it's a punishment for Americans coming through. It's like a little fly trap you've made. Like, bring them in, we torture them, and then send them out. I get it. Yeah, that was lots of, I've seen your city from way above while pooping myself. So, it's lovely. Toronto's, I'm very smelly. Now I know that. So, two things about Toronto. Is that going to be on Bleeding Cool?
Oh, yeah.
Tom, seeing Toronto while pooping himself.
Oh, dear.
I went to Jim Lee's panel. I'm gonna wander from top. Okay, who was out last night? Who was partying last night? Like, just two?
Really? What kind of comic book fans are you people? You sleep at...
We were out till 4.
We were out till 4.
And I had a 10 a.m. signing.
You did.
So, it's very... I'm ready to go. That's what I'm trying to say. So we're gonna wander from topic to topic. So I was at Jim Lee's thing yesterday, and he draws while he does it. He like does his work.
He does.
Yeah, and I want to type while I do this thing.
Oh, you want to sit over here?
That wouldn't project it, right?
It does actually. I can.
Wait,
give
so
you
I can write a genuine script right there?
Would you like to write?
At the end, we're gonna write a script, right?
Yeah, are we gonna go like Mad Lib style?
No,
like,
we're gonna write a Batman script. Or Mr. Miracle, I don't know, we can decide. I don't know, Plastic Man, what the fuck you wanna do? No Brother Power the Geek.
Alright, we've got a screen and a cursor and...
That is awesome.
Are we friends again now?
Yeah, we're friends. Okay, we're gonna do that. I'm looking at the clock. Alright, we're gonna do, at the end of the con, we'll write it. We'll write a comic book together. And then we'll see if we can get it published.
I'm pretty sure you can get anything published.
How hard could it be?
That came out terribly. That's not what I meant at all.
No, that's how I publish everything. You like Batman Elmer Fudd shirts on, whatever the fuck floats your boat. can we reverse things and start with questions?
We can start with questions for sure.
Is that cool if we reverse things and start with, because I feel like we do the questions at the end and you like people still have questions. Of course there's not very many of you, so I'll mostly ask questions to her about last night and what I did.
A log.
So does anyone have any questions? One person? Okay, so that's going to be a really long question.
54 minutes.
I'm timing you.
What did you do in Toronto last night?
What did I do in Toronto?
I got this.
What I remember. I was, I think I committed slow suicide. Someone texted me and they said, Tom, are you good with hikes? And I was like, no, because people fall off them. And they're like, good, because we got you something special for the con to thank you for coming to all these cons. And I'm like, awesome. I hope it's like a stuffed animal or maybe a Jim Lee sketch or something. They're like, no, we're going to hang you off a building. I was like, I used to be in the CIA. I was like, that's how you torture people. I mean, that's literally what Batman does. He hangs people off the building and he's like, what's Killer Croc's real name? And they're like, Killer Croc's his name is Killer Croc, Batman, you should figure it out. But, and so I assumed it, and so I was like, that doesn't sound like a reward, I'm not doing that, that's stupid. And then I get to the con, and I'm like, can you believe they're gonna hang us off a building? I'm talking to Scott Snyder, and Scott goes, yeah, metal! Ah! And I'm like, no, it's a bad thing. We don't want to hang off buildings because we're humans and we splatter when dropped. And Scott's like, metal! And I'm like, oh, that's not an argument, Scott. We need to develop logical conclusions and theses and we'll talk this over. Like, metal! And so I'm like, all right, well, I'm doing it. And I was kind of still on the fence, and then I found out Dan DiDio and Jim Lee were doing it, and they're technically my bosses, and by technically I mean actually. And so I called my wife, and I was like, they want me to dangle off this tower. I think they're going to interrogate me about Killer Croc. And she's like, I'm not a fucking nerd. Why you say references like that? And she's like, why would you do that? And I was like, well, the bosses are coming. She's like, you have to do it. I was like, wait, no, you're supposed to say no. I love you. Your job doesn't matter. And she's like, no, I have insurance. You're going to be fine.
And she took out extra insurance.
Yeah. So then I went to dinner and I was like, I'm just gonna back out at some point. And then I was like, Scott, I'm backing out. And he's like, metal! Oh, fuck. And so then we went into this tower of yours, and very nice people were like, yeah, we're gonna hang you off a tower. And I was like, you seem nice, but you're threatening to kill me. And they're like, yeah, that's the Canadian way. That's how we like win wars. And I'm like, oh. And then, you know, we got in a big fight over that, and they're like, you know, rubbing that you guys were in World War II like 5 years before us in my face and shit. So then we went to the top of the tower, and and I discover that Jim Lee is a fucking sociopath.
No fear.
He has no fear. He just, like, he's like, oh, good. You want me to hang off a building? No problem. Like, walks to the edge. He genuinely, Jim Lee, at the top of the tower, 1,800 feet down, looking over, leaning over, his death staring him right in the face, he looked bored. Like,
I, like, oh, there's a tether.
You're Canadian. Do you understand guilt? I felt genuine guilt. Like, oh my God, I'm not entertaining Jim Lee enough. I have to make a joke or tell him a story or, yeah. Like, I wanted to be like, how can I make this more exciting for you, Jim? Because he's like, I don't know. Another Saturday night. I wish I was with Todd McFarlane or some shit. I don't know. I was trying to entertain Jim Lee. I was like, oh, make faces. And he's like, Tom, and then, you know, I look over at Scott. And he's like, ah! He's like, all right. And then it came, like, my turn to look over the edge. And inside, I was thinking, well, I'm going to die now. Don't do that. And then outside, I was thinking, what Jim Lee's going to be, think I'm not good. And so then I walked to the edge, and I looked my own mortality in the face. Yeah. And it looked a lot like Toronto, which is not what I expected. But I didn't fall very far, and then Dan DiDio was tough and was doing it, and you were there, and you were tough and was doing it.
I did not cry.
No, you know, people look at me because they're like, Tom, you were in the CIA, so you're not scared of anything. And I was like, no, man, I was in the CIA, and I was scared the whole fucking time. I just did it because, you know, you know, sometimes in your life you're like, well, I don't want to do this, but, you know, I'm here. That's like my entire CIA experience. I was like, well, I guess we have to go out and get shot at, but I'm here, so, you know, I don't want to waste this opportunity. So, like, I was never not scared. And then we went home, and then we started drinking vociferously. Jim Lee told me, because I'm not the best drinker. I've been drunk under the table by most people in comics. And at one point, Jim's like, yeah, after the 10th shot, my line work gets bad on my sketches. Which just brought this great image of Jim Lee lining up 11 shots. And just like, he got out his gambit thing. He's like, when is this going to go off? I just seen it like Indiana Jones, like Jim Lee, challenging each other to a sketch contest after. Anyways, I'm off the tarps. And then Jim's like, it's like 2 in the morning, and we're like, let's go to sleep. And Jim's like, let's get noodles. And then he's like, there's a noodle place around the corner, by which he meant like a half hour away. And again, he still looks bored. So I'm feeling very guilty about this whole thing. I'm like trying to get him to risk his life at some point. And then he took us to 20 minutes to noodles, and we're all there because we're trying to be cool. And we're like, these are the best noodles ever. And Jim's like, nah, these suck. This whole thing sucks.
We tried so hard.
But it was a fun night, and I think it's still going. I'm still here.
Did you go to sleep?
That's a long story. Dude, you come and spotlight on Tom King and his drunken adventures in Canada.
Did you go to sleep?
I went home and watched Star Trek for a little while. I'm doing a Star Trek rewatch. Does anyone like Star Trek?
Yeah.
Right? So I'm doing like a big Star Trek rewatch. I'm on DS9 right now. So I watched some. I passed out to Sisko being angry about something, as he tends to be. All right, that was a long answer. What's in the back? I'll come back to you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, all the way in the back. Yeah.
Hi, we're the Visions. We just came to say hello.
Oh, hello, Visions.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for the Eisner. That was awesome. Oh, I saw you guys dressed up. That was amazing. That's not a question, though. Now you're on the spot.
Cool. We just came to say hello. We're actually on the way to our engagement party. We thought it would pop in even so.
You guys rock. Congratulations on the engagement. Unless you're like already married to other people and this is like you ruining your lives. Are you, you're okay? You're happy? Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you for being the Visions. I love that work, and that was the best Vision cosplay I've ever seen, so well done. Nice to meet you. All right, that wasn't a question, so they failed. I don't know how that marriage is gonna go.
Wow.
I'm just saying. be like, "Will you?" She's someone's gonna say, "Will you marry me?" He's like, "I've never heard a question before."
Will you marry me? Wait 10 issues and find out.
All right, who's next? Who has a question? All right, the guy in the white shirt behind.
So, I came to the panel on Friday with Scott Snyder.
I was there.
Yeah, you were there. And I really enjoyed it. And it was, to be honest with you, it was the first time that I've been exposed to you. So,
I'm sorry. Let me apologize in advance.
It's not contagious.
You have a new fan. So, as a new fan, what would you recommend? Where should I start? Like, what work would you recommend that I begin with to read your stuff?
Yeah, read The Vision. I win all the awards for that one. Yeah, that one's good. It's a complete story. It's 12 issues. And if you like that one, it's part of a trilogy, and so you can read the other, Omega Moon and Sheriff of Babylon. So that's like, it's like contained. Yeah, just The Vision. It's just like these, up here, you know, it's light and funny, and it's mostly laughs.
If you want to read the best thing he's written, I highly suggest Batman and Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, I read Batman and Wonder Woman too. That's shorter, but yeah, I like The Vision. That's good.
The Vision's amazing, and it's good. It's like you said, it's a contained story. So
that's the easiest question ever, and it was very specific. Your marriage will succeed.
And you have a new fan. Check that out. You got one.
You rock. Based on my performance at a panel. Whoa.
No, because what you said in the panel when Scott was talking about his experience when he writes, like how he wants to connect with the fans and so forth, and that's the most important thing for him. And what you said made a lot of sense, so I wanted to thank you for that.
Aw, you rock, man.
What did you say?
It was too brilliant to repeat. Why didn't you guys go to that panel? That's what I said. I said, where's you guys? No, comes at a panel stays at a panel. That's why we're going to spoil it here. I'm going to announce what Batman Catwoman says. It's all panelish.
Okay.
All right, more questions?
All right, who's next?
Let's do in the front.
So the series that you work on that have become considered classics, they were 12-issue...
Classics? I've only been classics. For 3 years.
No, they're classics. They're 12-issue maxi series, and now you move on to something like Batman, where there's a lot of people controlling that character. Did you find it challenging to have to switch over to a character where there's a lot of editorial control over?
I feel like I should say no, because it would affect how you read the book. But we're in a panel, we can be honest. Yeah, dude, it was fucking hard. Yeah, and I was totally intimidated by it. I was following Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo and their brilliant run. And at first, I think I was a little timid or a little, not timid, but I was, when you're timid in comics, you fall back on cliches. I think that's, when you're timid in any writing, you fall back on cliches. You're kind of like, oh, that's safe. So, like, if you look at the first arc of Batman, which I really like, and it's beautifully drawn, and there are moments in it that I think are some of the best, but... you see me like, oh, I want to show Batman with the Batmobile, and I want to show the gadgets, and I want to show Gordon on the roof, and the disappearing, and just like all the different things. Just because I was like, if I hit these notes, the fans will be happy. And I wasn't thinking more about like how I can sort of make Batman my own. I was more thinking of how I can make it good for the fans, kind of. And which is I wasn't an idiot back then. I think that's still a good thought. But in evolving into it and into the character was the idea that I sort of had to let that go and let Batman be more of a thing that comes from me instead of sort of something I'm trying to create for other people and to write like the comic I want it to be. And that was an evolution. I feel like I'm still kind of getting there. I mean, it's a totally different... I mean, the thing about Batman is it's double shift, which to you means nothing. That's like, yeah, like what does double shift mean? But to a creator, it means that like it has to get written much faster. It's more of an it's the difference between watching a play and watching an improv show. Like, an improv show is amazing because there's spontaneity and it's creators like right on the edge and you're watching people dangle off a tower. And that's what you're... When you see... Nobody has ever double-shift a 100,000-selling book ever. And now we're doing it 2 years in. So this is something that's never been done before. And you're watching creators on the edge. And you have to write... I have to write for 3 to 4 different artists at the same time. I write it completely out of order. And But that said, like, I enjoy it. Because I think comics, like, what the magic of comics is that crazy improv. Like, when you're doing a TV show or a novel, you're just like, how can I make this as perfect as I can? I have so much time. But comic books, I write it, I send it off, I talk to my editor for 5 minutes, and then it gets published. That's fucking it, right? Like, that's what it has to be. And that's what makes it great, because it can be, it's you on the front lines, you making something that's right there for the reader. So yeah, that's the difference between Batman and everything else. And I kind of love it, if that makes sense.
He's killing it on Batman, too.
I like it, yeah. It gets good. There's some good shit coming. 32 is the big issue where you get the answer, and that's in a month and a half. And this week, on Wednesday, one of the most beautiful issues come out. It's Kite Man, Ballad of Kite Man Part 2, and it's by Clayman, and it's beautiful. The first one, he was colored and inked by someone I didn't really felt mesh with his style. Now he's with Jordy, and his brother's inking him, and it's one of the most beautiful comics I've ever seen. Jordy Blair is the colorist on everything I do. And so, I'm really looking forward to some of the Batman stuff that's coming up. I think it's some of the best stuff I've ever written. But yeah.
Any Kite Man fans in the audience?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah!
There we go.
I should have said on the tower instead of, I'm pooping myself.
Oh.
Well, what's up in the corner over there?
How are you?
I like all these questions. You guys rock.
I was really touched by the story Black Death in America.
Oh, dude, really? You read that?
Yeah, that was
you and me are like the only people who read that story. And I barely read it. I wrote it.
It was amazing. And I just wanted to know, like, why, or how did that story come to you? Why this story?
No one knows. Does anyone know what Black Death in America is? No, that's
what you were nominated for your first Eisner for.
Right? I lost, god damn it.
Yeah, now you have two.
Vertigo was doing these anthology series. I broke into comics in a Vertigo anthology, and they asked me to do another one, and you want to say, what's it about? And they just said, black. And I was like, that's a weird thing for things to be about. In my head, I was like, well, I should write about people of color. And what that means then. And then, but no one else had that idea. So then they're like, Tom, you're the only person. I was like, everyone must have thought about that. I had been reading a blog by Henry Louis Gates Jr., and he had highlighted, and you know, it's just the coolest war story you've ever heard, which was this story of a black soldier in World War I who took on, he was under French command because the Americans wouldn't let him fight because he was a black soldier, and black soldiers weren't allowed to fight for America. And he took on basically 36 Germans by himself and fought for an hour by himself and killed 30 people. And it was like a superhero story, he gets his gun jams halfway through and they're still coming, so he starts bayoneting them, and then he gets his rifle stuck in a body, so he takes out a machete and he starts fucking like he's fucking Batman, dude. And it was and when you're a nerd like me, you read a story like that, you get super excited because it's like I'm one man against the world. That's what we all read comics for, is like those amazing stories. And then you read about what happened, and his nickname was Black Death. And he was promoted as like a war hero afterwards, and people would shout at him, Black Death, Black Death, Black Death. When you read about the rest of his life, he was tragically like not a victim, but sort of he was on the winds of history, and the winds of history then for a black man, a black hero at that time, were horrible. And he was treated horribly for the rest of his life and died in an unknown grave. Was eventually, they found him buried in an unmarked grave in Arlington National Cemetery, which is sort of the highest honor you can give, but nobody knew he was there. I wrote about that, and I got J.P. Leone. He said he wanted to do it in black and white. That's such an American story, because it's about both the best of America, this idea that we can, I mean, these are Canadian values too, but we just pretend everything's good is an American value. It's kind of our thing. But the idea that sort of one man can make a difference is part of the American ideal, but the idea that you can be consumed by
rampant racism is part of the American reality, and so mixing those two together make a good story, basically. That's a long answer for a story nobody's read. But get it, it's free. You can find it on the internet for free because they released it. So if you go on my Facebook page and just scroll far enough down, you'll see it for free. Yeah.
And it was nominated for an Eisner, so I mean, it's probably pretty good.
Oh my God, it was terrible. So I was at the Eisners, and it was like right at the very end, and it was my first time going to the Eisners. I was super excited. I had a speech prepared. And John Lewis, who you guys probably don't know, but he's like a great hero of the civil rights movement in the U.S., he was giving out the awards, and because he had done March. And so he was. So John Lewis was presenting the award. I had written this thing. It was about Black Death in America. It was like, I was convinced it was going to win. And I was like, this is going to be the greatest moment ever. I'm going to have the best story. And he gets up there and he's like, and Adrian Tomine for sad story about a girl in a lake. I don't know what a firefighter was. I'm throwing some Tomine shade. He knows what he did. And so, you know, like a gracious, manly man, I fucking walked out. I was like, excuse me, I need to use the restroom. And I politely walked over and then just fucking left. Because I'm 3 years old. And, but yeah, so that's my Eisner story where I handled it very well.
You know,
that's a long answer to a short question. But thanks for reading that story.
You know what showed up on my time off today?
What?
You won your Harvey for being the best promising
the
news.
What the time off? I use fuck. Oh, they're playing with each other.
The best up and comer in comics last year.
Good.
You won your first Harvey.
I'm ready to up and come. That's dude.
I think they got
that
one
really bad.
I think they got that one right. Oh boy.
Oh boy. Don't print that.
But that's a terrible award. I mean, I love winning it. Don't get me wrong, because I like winning
best
things.
Best newcomer in comics.
Yeah, best new. Oh, that doesn't sound better. But that's like that's like the Milli Vanilli. Do you guys know who Milli Vanilli is?
Yeah.
They famously won best newcomer at the Grammys. Like that's how I felt. Like, oh, I'm the Milli Vanilli. Everyone's gonna find out. Like,
yeah, but look.
Fucking Scott Snyder's been secretly writing my comics. It's the dog, yeah. My daughter secretly writes my comics, they're gonna know. Yeah, that's good. All right, more questions. Oh man, there's a ton. You guys rock.
Yeah, check this out.
I'm gonna go to this other side of the room. The guy in the second row.
So I like how thoughtful and philosophical your comics get.
You can tell by my personality that I'm thoughtful and philosophical. Or at least up and coming.
Without being too heavy-handed. Are these your own fully formed kind of philosophical ideas that you bring into the comics, or are you kind of surprised as the series go on by what comes out of it?
I don't think there's a point to having fully formed philosophical ideas if you're a writer. If I had fully formed philosophical ideas and I wanted to tell you about my fully formed philosophical ideas, I would just write a fully formed philosophical essay. I was a philosophy, one of my majors in college was philosophy, and so I read a lot of philosophy. And I remember at the time thinking, I was like, why does anyone write literature? All the questions that literature is addressing are in philosophy. That's like such an 18-year-old fucking stupid thought, right? You're like, I'm stupid, I'm never going to read literature again, man. Wittgenstein knows what this is all about. Fuck Moby Dick, you know? I went to Tom's panel. He said, "Fuck Moby Dick and made fun of Adrian Tomine."
I meant to bring a clicker.
Dude, I didn't read the story, but you know it was about a sad woman by a lake. You just know it, right? Like one of his ex-girlfriends. Like, oh, why did she break up with me? what was I talking about? Oh, my philosophical ideas. Yeah, fully formed philosophical. So I was like, there's no point to literature. We might as well just fucking, I would go to these literature classes and we'd be like, what is Jane Austen trying to say? And then we would just, like, interpret it like, this is what she's trying to say. I was like, why didn't she just fucking say it? Why'd she have to tell the story? Like, she should just be like, but then it took me a while. I think you get this with a little bit of age where you kind of see that, nobody is able to describe what's true in description. That's why the Bible works and the Quran and comics, that's why they all work, is because the life we experience can't be described in the words we have. But to get to that truth of what life is, you have to go sort of beyond words. Words are almost like a, like fucking Kirby had it right. Words are the goddamn source wall, and beyond it is the truth. And we're banging at those words, trying to get to that truth. And the only way to get through that wall is to tell stories. And so stories convey a truth that's beyond words. And so I don't have, if I was trying to convey you philosophy, that would be boring. If I was like, I'm going to tell people, I'm going to write vision so I can learn, they can learn what that robots are people too, and that'll be a lesson that they can take with them. Every, you know, when they go to the car wash. So they'd be like, right, you're like at the car wash, you're like, whoa, man, are robots people? Oh, I read that story by Tom. Robots are people. That's a fucking revelation.
And they're washing my car.
No, that's, you're trying to get at, like, I'm trying to describe something that's in me and trying to convey that wisdom to you, but I can't talk about it because I don't, the words don't exist to talk about it, so I write a story and try to get as close as I can. And hopefully we sort of share something. Because, you know, obviously you're reading it. I bring myself to it when you write it. You bring yourself to it when you read it. And we have some sort of magical connection. And we all hold hands and sing Kumbaya.
I just want everybody to appreciate that we went from this amazing philosophical things about words and breaking through to car washes.
I'm just saying that when I read an Adrian Tomine story and I see the woman wandering by the lake, it's like I'm connecting with him, and I'm like,
that's an excellent question.
Thanks, man. What's up over there?
I wanted to congratulate you on your Eisner and all.
Thank you. And you want to rub it in my face and win the Hugo?
No.
Fuck you.
I want to say that I'm actually a brother to the color artist, Murphy Del Fonso.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome, man. Is that a question? Is that you're quizzing me?
Another question.
All right. Well, your brother rocks. That's awesome. Yeah. I wouldn't have won without him. So tell him that.
Awesome. My question is, how much would, other than Sheriff, which I know you draw like your life experiences and everything to that.
Sure.
How much would you say goes into the rest of your work, life experience-wise, and like mostly DC, how much would you say contextually, historically, would you draw from the old material, like say Mr. Miracle and Batman?
It's 100%. It's all. I mean, that's a stupid cliche answer, but I don't know if I have a better one, but I'll try. When you write, if you're trying to write well, you have to bring yourself to the work, because that's like all you have. If you're just bringing to the work, man, I really love Pulp Fiction, and I really love Mr. Miracle, and I'm going to combine them. Mr. Miracle is going to sit at a diner and talk about Madonna songs. That's not Pulp Fiction. That's fucking Reservoir Dogs. Sorry. That would be the lead from Bleeding Cool. Tom confuses Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. Fuck that guy. Adrian Tomine. Yeah.
It's just four, right? It's just him and Barton and Diner. Just him and Barton
and Diner talking about the time. If you're just reflecting pop culture back at people, what's the fucking point? So you have to put yourself into the comic to get at all that stuff I was talking about. So yeah, so it's all in there. I mean, I was fortunate enough, and you're probably fortunate enough, to have lived some life before I started writing, so I don't just have to sort of write about writing. I was in the CIA, served overseas, so that's in there. I've had some tragedies happen to me, and I've had some great joys. Like, if you look in all of my work, the main character is always madly in love with his wife. I'm madly in love with my wife, and it's in every fight. I just can't get it out of my work. It's always there. And now Batman's madly in love with Catwoman, right? It's like, just, I bleed into my pages. I mean, I never write myself. When you write yourself, I try to write a novel once, like as like a roman à clef, one of those things, and it was terrible because my thoughts are actually pretty stupid. You guys are witnesses to that. And so I try to write other people's thoughts, but put myself in there, like put the emotions of my life into other people's thoughts, and that creates fiction. That sounds, I like the summary at the end. Is that okay?
Way to bring it back.
All right, cool. Blue shirt. Yeah, you have a blue shirt on.
That's purple, Tom.
Oh, I'm colorblind, really. Yeah, you and me, brother. My wife constantly makes fun of me. I don't know why I love her so much. That's it. All my comics are going to be about wives making fun of people.
What is Mr. Miracle's favorite song?
Like a Prayer, right? That's my favorite Madonna song. Never write yourself except in terms of Madonna songs.
You guys reading Mr. Miracle?
Yeah.
You guys excited for the next one?
That was a great question. I like your purple shirt, even though your shirt's blue and you're trying to fool me.
Mr. Miracle's kind of awesome.
Can I ask you guys a question? This is a serious question.
Uh-oh.
This is, we're going to get deep here for a second. Do you guys remember that fucking dress, the gold and blue dress thing? Right? And like half of us were like, it's gold, and half of us were, it's blue. And we were like obsessed for a little while because life was better and Trump wasn't president. We could be obsessed about things that weren't nuclear war. And why the fuck did that just happen in that one picture? Why can't they recreate that? Why? Doesn't it feel like a fucking skip in the Matrix? I think about that all the goddamn time. Like eventually, like the scientists came in, they're like, oh, it's because your eye and the angle and the reflection and your brain. I was like, oh, that's really interesting. But then they never gave you another example of it, right? Like, they're never like, here's another thing that half of us see one way and half of us see the other. It's just that one fucking picture. That makes no goddamn sense. Anyways, I know you guys came here for my things on the gold and blue dress. But if you're ever at the car wash and you're like, okay, I got the robot bot, then think about the gold and blue dress and fucking text me about why they didn't fucking recreate that immediately. There should be books, right? It should be like Magic Eye. Like, remember Magic Eye? Who's old enough to remember that bullshit? Right? Like, we were all staring at stupid books and we're like, like, there should be 30 books that were like different pictures where half of us see it one way and half of us see the other. But no, it's just that one goddamn... You think this whole thing is fake. I think we're all in an Adrian Tolmine book. We're all going to be sad by that lake.
I mean, you do think his shirt's blue, so...
Oh, that's one. But yeah, but not half the population is colorblind. And I don't accept your theory.
I reject your premise.
All right, who's next? Ask me about
what
the dresses.
What do we
got? Dude in the black shirt. It looks kind of like the Prime Minister a little bit.
Why, hello. No.
I'm really fascinated by the narrative voice of the Vision. The series.
Sweet.
To me, it feels like something specific that I've been made fun of for making that reference, but can you speak to what, if any, illusions you had or what you're sort of tapping into? It doesn't feel like anything else in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I stole it from people. I took it. It's a lot of stealing from Neil Gaiman's Sandman. If you look at Neil Gaiman's Sandman, he does this thing all the time, and he stole it from Alan Moore. So it's like, and then Alan Moore stole it from, I don't know, weed. probably a snake god.
How many reporters are in here?
Okay, guys, late last night at like 4 in the morning, I was doing impressions of Alan Moore riding a camel. I don't know why, but that's where we were. Oh, this camel's too slow. It's only got one arm. I like two camels.
That's what you remember?
I remember that. I remember at some point I was doing Alan Moore riding a camel joke.
Stanley stole it.
After 1986, nobody should have ridden a camel again. I rode the last camel.
So the voice of the Vision.
Oh, the voice of the Vision.
Have you read Adrian Tolmine's latest? It's just a fucking guy by a lake. Riding a camel.
I like that got into Sean Connery at the end. It's fine. It's all works. It's all the same. They're fucking British. Oh, wait, we're in Canada. God save the Queen. She rocks. So the voice of Vision. Neil Gaiman does this thing in comics where you'll be reading about like a magic thing, and he'll zoom in on something and tell you like he'll be like She put on her necklace. It was the necklace her grandmother wore the night she fled from the Holocaust and killed 6 people. And then he'll never talk about it again, right? And you'll be like, what the fuck was that necklace? And then you're like waiting the whole series, like, what happened? What are the dead grandmother? Why did you kill 6 people on the way to the Holocaust? So he does that thing. And I love it, and it's spooky and wonderful. And so if you go back to that, Alan Moore does it in Swamp Thing all the time, where he'll be like, I remember, like, there's a specific issue where he's talking about, like, this witch cult, and he's like, and because he's Alan Moore, and they frayed each other in their skins, and then they threw skulls at each other. No one knows why they threw that particular skull. And you're like, what? Why did they think about that? So I was like, I love that voice of, like, someone who knows something the audience doesn't quite know and hints at it but never reveals it. And then so I stole that, and then I merged it with I'm a big fan of Russian literature, and a War and Peace is like one of my favorite novels, and there's a moment in War and Peace where one of the four main characters is riding a horse and he's hunting a fox. And it's in the middle of the book, it's halfway through the adventure. War and Peace is long. That's the Bleeding Cool headline. Tom King, War and Peace is long. Alan Moore rides a camel very oddly. And in the middle of it, Tolstoy takes, just in a narrative voice, like totally calmly, was like, he's hunting this fox and he's on a horse. And he's like, and that was the happiest moment in his life. And you're halfway through the novel and you're like, and you're just like, what? How, what in there? And if it fucks your mind up, you're like, so the rest of this, even though he meets his wife and has kids, you're still thinking about that moment with the fox. So I took those two voices and I combined them into making that sort of vision voice of someone who knows everything about these characters and knows what they're going to do in the future. That's like the highfalutin. Can I give you the lowfalutin? Is there a lowfalutin if there's a highfalutin?
There is now.
All right, so this is the lowfalutin thing. I had just written this series called Omega Men and it got fucking canceled after issue 3. And they got uncanceled. But this is by the two guys who I went hanging my the tower off of. They're always torturing me. I started Vision during the cancellation, during those few weeks that it was canceled. And I was like, why do series get canceled? And I went back to Scott Snyder's work. And what Scott does better than anyone in comics is, like, in the first few pages, he's like, and at the end of the story, the world fucking ends, you know? Like, if you think of, like, Zero Year, it starts with Batman on the motorcycle going through Gotham and everything's crazy, and then it flashes back. And so, like, he puts the stakes right at the front. And I was like, oh, that's why comics succeed, because you need so with Vision, which was a series, it was a slow burn series, and I didn't want it to be canceled on issue 3. I wanted to put up front, like, this is a slow burn, but the world ends at the end. So it's those three things. What do we do? Alan Moore, Camel, Tolstoy, and Desperation. That's a long
answer. Camels, foxes, and death.
Camels, foxes, and death. All right, well, any more questions? This is great. I don't have to fucking say anything. You guys are asking questions the whole time. What's up, man?
First off, you're my favorite writer.
What? My mother told you to say that, but I appreciate you following through.
So my question is,
you're my favorite fan. Fuck the rest.
So my question has to do with Mr. Miracle. So there's that whole part towards the beginning where he sees her eyes as brown.
Yeah.
And then right at the end of the issue, you see her eyes are blue.
Are you sure? Maybe half the audience saw it as blue and half the other side.
See how that all ties in.
So does the whole kind of reality altering thing, does that tie into the whole rebirth thing, or is this kind of your own big story you're creating?
That's a good question. I mean, Mr. Miracle is in continuity. Like, what happens at the end of Mr. Miracle will affect the rest of the Marvel Universe. Will affect the entire Marvel Universe. That's a fucking twist. Goddamn. Issue 4, Iron Man pops out. You're not going to see that shit coming.
They are now.
What's left, like, right? Like Jeff's like, okay, the Watchmen are in comics. And then, like, did you guys read Metal? That's fucking rock, right? But I'm gonna spoil the end for you. Dream shows up. Like, who else can you turn the page and be surprised by? Like, Iron Man would be like, whoa, what do you think is coming? So it's in continuity the same way Vision's in continuity, like Viv still exists in the Marvel Universe. But it's a self-contained story, so you don't have to, it doesn't really, you don't have to know about the spine of the DCU to read it. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. All when you ask me rebirth questions, I get all scared because I see Jeff Johns punching me in the face. And he's like, he's buff, you know, he could punch. And so that's the best answer I can give without getting punched in the face.
So I want to tell you guys something cool about Mr. Miracle, though.
What?
Like, you're good. Most comics, you know, dip in sales after the first issue. What happened with Mr. Miracle?
Well, let's talk about Omega Men.
So Omega Men got uncanceled thanks to the fans, but Mr. Miracle is getting more fans as you go.
Yeah, Mr. Like, Miracle is doing well. Yeah, Mr. Miracle outsold the Avengers.
Yeah. All right. That's a big deal. Like, for issue two to be a bigger order than issue, like, that's a big deal. These guys should know that.
I've told this story before, but I love it, so I'm going to tell it again. I was at... when we announced that I was going to be the writer of Batman, we did this big on-stage thing and it was like live on YouTube. And so, are you filming me right now? Holy fuck! Oh man, don't send it to Adrian Tomine. I made a lot of jokes. Alan Moore probably already wants to kill me because of the button thing, so we're good. How dare he write that button thing? This camel is very uncomfortable. It's gonna be my favorite thing for the rest of my life. I'm on the stage and it's a YouTube event and we're gonna do live and Jim Lee's there and Diane Nelson, who's the head of the company, and I'm very intimidated because I haven't met any of these people before, and like my childhood hero is like John Romita Jr. is like sitting next to me, and then Scott Snyder's there, and beforehand we're kind of joking, and I'm coming off Omega Men about to write Batman. And Dan's introducing us all, and I'm making fun of Dan because that's kind of like the tradition of all comics. And this is Dan DiDio, and I make some joke, like I make fun of his Phantom Stranger run. And I was like, oh, your Phantom Stranger run was just people sitting by a lake and crying. And he turns to me and he's like, oh, make another joke and I'm going to put you on our worst selling book. And I turn to him and I go, Dan, I already write your worst selling book. And there was this look, you could see like in his eyes, like it was a funny joke, but in his eyes he's thinking, oh my god, I just put this fucker on Batman.
And here we are.
So it's.
You've got 15 minutes. You want to write something?
Well, that's right. That's what you want to write. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh man, are the keys different in Canada? Do they go in different places?
Well, there's an
N. Oh, I didn't make that ad joke, man. All right, let's see if Canada typing is different. Do I have to type everything in French and English?
Yep. No. Can you type in French?
Hello. Bonjour. I'm fucking nailing it. Oh, I already messed up. What is this bad computer? Okay, so what are we writing? What comic book are we writing?
Alan Moore on a camel.
Alan Moore on a camel? In Batman? Okay, we're gonna call this. Is this like Alan Moore?
He's going to get his button back.
Right. Oh. What issue of Alan Moore Rides a Camel is this?
Alan Moore Rides a Camel.
Going to tweet
Rebirth.
This.
Number
one. Rebirth number one? That's a long fucking title. Rebirth number one. Because the Alan Moore Rides a Camel 52 series was just not good. So, yeah, and we were going back to the. We're going back. I know normally I would center this stuff, right? We need to do some stuff up here. Well, oh, here it is. Okay. There we are. Sorry, I have a bad. All right. Okay, this is going to. Do we have a title? We have a subtitle for this. What's going to be. What's he going to say?
Arrival of the Bat Camel?
Arrival of the Bat Camel? Well, that's not a good title. Let's call it Hump Day. By Tom King and a bunch of fucking Canadians.
That's a new level. You swore in text.
Let's see, does shift enter work? Okay, no, we have to do insert page. So okay, so that'll be the title page. That's pretty good. Why are we in like double space? I fucking hate double space. We need to be in single space. I don't know how to do it with this computer. You're gonna have to get used to it. Alright. I'm very particular. Like, I write an 11 point font. And what the fuck is this shit? What shit? A page number? No, I just need to be on the next goddamn page. Where is insert pages? Pages. Page break? Well, I don't know how to use it.
Hit blank.
Hit blank?
Hit blank.
Does that take me to the next page?
Yeah.
Alright, good.
Down there?
Yeah. I'm sorry for the poor programming. Oh, let's go back to I went to Tom and I watched him learn WordPerfect. What a fucking great thing that was. Now I do home. This is terrible. I'm not going to use this program again. Okay, here you go. Okay, so this would be page one, right? Nailed it.
Well,
what should I do? This document has just been sent to Alan Moore. Thank you.
You prayed to the snake god.
The snake god fucking got me. He's like, he's getting briefed now by, "Hey, Alan, someone's trying to write that camel comic again." Oh, I knew it. Ride on a camel one fucking time and everyone's making fun of him. Oh, we can't write our comic book now. Oh, boo.
I don't know what I did.
Apparently insert page break was too complicated for Canadian computers. I see how it is.
Oh, it's the projector.
It's the projector?
Yeah.
All right.
Say something witty.
Do you have any questions here? Not about me writing on Word. What's up, dude, in the back?
Who is your favorite Omega Man?
Scraps, because I invented her. No, Callista is my favorite Omega Man. She is, I love her. She's just badass. Whenever I sign Omega Man, I write my favorite line from the whole thing is when Callista, at the very end, you know, they're off, like, they have the big debate over, like, oh, we need to learn our big moral lesson, and Tom's going to teach us what to think at the car wash. And it's all about, like, we learned morality, and we learned that, you know, war sucks, and all this shit. And then Callista's like, fuck that. And she kills the Viceroy, and then she goes, "The war's over, I win." and it's just, it's. I love that line, "I win." Saying I love something I wrote is the most arrogant thing I can say, so that fucking arrogant guy, just get on a cowboy like the rest of us. Yes, do right there.
Who's your favorite Green Lantern?
Hal Jordan is my favorite Green Lantern. I got to write him for one issue in Darkseid War. And I mentioned the Star Trek nerd thing. So I just think of Hal Jordan as Kirk. Like, I feel like they're the same person. And just, like, Hal Jordan's the guy who would go to God and be like, why does God need a starship? You know, like, he fucking, like that's who Hal Jordan is. Like, he's got no fear. Like, Hal Jordan is Jim Lee on a tower. That's fucking Hal Jordan.
That's unreal. We've reached the end of my technical capabilities.
I'm sorry. Next time we'll write our Alan Moore epic camel riding thing. I'm glad you got to witness my process. You know that's still fucking on that computer. Like, the next people are gonna come up here, and it's gonna be a panel on, like, Pokemon, and it's gonna be all fucking 11-year-old kids, and they're gonna be like, "I've never heard the word fuck before. I wonder if this is the day." And turn on the computer, and it's gonna be like, "Fucking Canadians." And my, yeah, my name's like, who wrote this? We'll never know. It could be anyone.
I have power winning.
Yes, who's the white hat dude?
Where did the bat burger scene come from?
Yeah. You're gonna notice that when people ask me where things come from, I steal them. I stole that from Mark Wade and Alex Ross But I ask permission, because I'm nice. If Kingdom Come, you guys read that book? I love that book. But the best part, to me, the best part of the whole thing, it actually wasn't in the original series, the best part is at the very end, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman sit down and just have fucking a meal together. I know, that's really weird, Tom, that you would like that, since you just wrote a whole issue about Batman having dinner with Joker. And it's the best scene, and it's funny, and it's character-driven, and in the background are all these jokes, because they're at one of these, like, in the 90s, we had all these for the younger people, we had all these restaurants that were like theme restaurants, like they were like celebrity themes or Hollywood themes, or, and so it was a superhero themed restaurant. There's all these jokes, so I love that idea. And I grew up in LA, and we have a chain called Fat Burger. It's a big chain in LA. And so I was just looking for the worst pun I could, so Bat Burger is pretty easy. And then I had so much, my favorite one was, I literally wrote in my script, some people make jokes in their script, I only do that when I'm writing in front of an audience. But I was writing the script and I wrote a KGBLT, which... and I immediately put an enter, and I put editor note, and I put, this is the best thing I will ever write in my entire career. Thank you for having reached this high water mark with me. It's all going to be shit from here on out. KGBLT.
That's fucking funny.
I like that scene. Thanks. We should bring Bat Burger back. We should have some Bat Burger, right? All right, we'll do that.
Next panel,
we'll do the next Pokemon panel, we'll get it. What other questions? What's up, dude?
What was your reaction when you found out that Viv was going to be used in Champions?
I was super happy. Mark Wade, you remember how I asked Mark Wade for, this relates to the last question, are you guys fucking planning this shit? So I was super happy because I had the Bat Burger idea in my head, but I hadn't reached out to Mark Wade yet, and I was like, leverage, you know. but Mark reached out to me via Twitter direct message, and he's like, would it be cool if I used Viv Vision? And my first thought was, oh, if they make a movie, I can make some money. I don't know. My first thought was, you know, creativity and art and love of the genre. But mostly the movie thing. And I said yes, because I love Mark and I love his stuff. And I love that character. I love Viv. And I can't write her because I signed my name to a piece of paper that says I can't. So I'm glad she lives on. She's like in video games and stuff, and she's... that's what comics are. We're a tower of nerds. This is a horrible image, and I would do better. I probably couldn't, but I'll pretend I could. But like, it's like all when you're writing a comic, what you're doing is you're standing on shoulders of people who are standing on shoulders of people who are standing on shoulders, and you're all writing the same story, and you're having sort of this, you're having a connection, and you're writing Batman, and you're seeing what it's like to be Bill Finger and to be the child of immigrants and to suffer his whole life, and you're feeling what it's like to be John Byrne and be a proud Canadian. I didn't say anything bad about John Byrne. That's good. And you're feeling what it's like to be Steve Englehart and to be fucking on so much acid and still be able to write comics, and you're feeling what it's like to be Scott Snyder and all of those where you're like, oh man, I'm just gonna nerd out, but you're like fucking Dax in DS9. I told you I was watching it last night, but you are, they're like all fucking symbionts inside you. That's a worse metaphor, but I love it. And so when you're writing, you feel I feel like I'm a symbiont shoved into Mark Wade's belly. That's what I'm trying to say. That's fucking brilliant. That's the best thing he said all night. What do you think, Camel? Stop talking to me. I'm going to do the Camel talking out. We could have had fun with that fucking script.
You should consider it. Wow. Continue it on Twitter.
No, then he'll see it.
Hey, someone named Tom King making fun of me on a camel.
You have 5 minutes left.
5 minutes. So, who's got a question?
What's
up? You guys all ask questions. You're the best fucking audience ever.
Awesome audience.
You guys are. And I'm not just sucking up to you because there's more of you than me, but just a little bit. What's up?
What super obscure DC character? Like, everyone has that one where it's like, I want to do something with that character and no one's doing anything with that character.
Superman?
Was it Kite Man?
Super obscure DC character that I would love to do something with. No, Kite Man was just a complete coincidence. That's a good. I always make fun of Brother Power the Geek because that's like the worst character ever created. That would be like a challenge, like that nobody could make that good ever. Do you guys know what Brother Power the Geek is? It was created by who the fuck was it? Who wrote Jet with Joe Simon? And I I think Joe Flanagan, maybe Hardy, I don't know. Anyways, it was just a way to make fun of hippies in the late 60s. Oh, no, I have a better answer. Brother Power, fuck that shit. I'm doing it, Mr. Miracle, Funky Flashman.
Yes.
Funky Flashman. Do you guys know what Funky Flashman is? Can I give you some background? You do? Right, I'll tell you, people who don't know, this is the best. So Jack Kirby wrote Mr. Miracle, obviously. He wrote it like in the late 60s, early 70s. And he had done some work previously with this guy, Stan Lee, who's not related to Jim Lee. You can Wikipedia him. Stan Lee's a real person. And Jack Kirby did not have very kind thoughts towards Stan Lee. I love Stan Lee, for the record. He rides great fucking camel. But he put Stan Lee in the comic book of Mr. Miracle. And called him Funky Flashman. He was a character in the comic book, and he had a partner who was called House Roy, which was Roy Thomas, the co-creator of Vision. And you're like, oh, that's a funny idea. You put your former partner in, you make jokes, and it's kind of like I was doing with Tomine or whatever. It's like writing. No, it was really, really mean. Like if you read it, it's like he like. It's visceral hatred of Jack Kirby towards Stan Lee in a mainstream comic book in Mr. Miracle number 6, if you want to pick it up. And it like starts off with like the Funky Flashman character like takes off his wig and gets a delivery of money from his uncle, because Stan Lee's uncle was the owner of Marvel owner of Marvel Comics, and like it's like immediately calls him like a guy who wears a toupee and just gets paid by his family. It's like really mean. And by the way, Jack Kirby had no editor on this, so he was just like, I'm going for it. He's like, I've been mad for 50 fucking years. And so now to take that character and to put him in a comic book, and I love Stan Lee, like I worship him. He's on my like gods of comics. Not everyone's gods of comics, not a fucking original idea. But to take that character and to both be able to poke fun at Stan Lee but also sort of bring out what's awesome about Stan Lee is awesome. So that's a better answer than Brother in Power the Geek. Funky Flashman. Now I wouldn't do House Roy, that's mean.
I think ending on Funky Flashman is a great way to wrap up the panel.
Oh, thanks.
So guys, thank you for coming. You can follow Tom on Twitter, Tom King TK. It's pretty much this. But you guys have a good time?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish you were in that college because I get a good page rate.
Uh-huh. You just left someone free pages.
I know. With my name on it. You should have written your name on it. Written by Scott Snyder.
You guys can catch Tom down at his table in the Pro Artist Alley.
Thanks, guys.